everybody has a story. It's like I'm Oprah and I've got a talk show, but everybody's got a story. And I'm starting a little thing called My Money Story. And it's going to be fun. We're going to hear about people's stories that we can learn from. So Mel, thanks for joining us on My Money Story on My Millennial Money.
You're welcome.
Now, for everybody at home, we are sitting in the United States in Columbus, Ohio, and you've had a bit of a listen to My Millennial Money before, haven't you?
Oh, I have. I actually have a terrible story.
Yeah. What's that story? It's actually funny, and I've kept forgetting to tell people about this story. So what happened?
Well, I was driving, listening to My Millennial Money, and there was a part that was so hilarious that I was laughing so hard that I missed a sign telling me that the speed limit had changed. And I was out in the countryside outside of Columbus, Ohio, so I thought that the speed limit was pretty high. So I was zooming along, laughing hysterically at My Millennial Money, and a police car was driving in the opposite direction and he was waving at me. And I thought, how friendly. All of these American police officers just are amazing. And so he waved to me and I waved back. And then all of a sudden he spun around and put his sirens on and pulled me over. Apparently I was going 25 over.
25 miles.
Yes.
That's a lot. 25
miles over. But My Millennial Money is that funny that it distracted me that much that I was having such a good time.
Did he give you a fine?
No, he didn't, because he was trying to be all hardcore and he said to me, did you see me waving at you? And I said, yeah, I just thought you were being friendly. And then he broke out laughing and he couldn't be the bad cop anymore and he just waved me on. So
how funny.
All's well that ends well.
Exactly. Now, for those playing at home, that's 40 kilometers an hour over. What the heck? Oh, anyway. So, Mel, you're a mother of three.
Yeah.
Zach, who's 17. Toby, who's 14. Evie, who's 12. Okay. What is your first memory about money?
My first memory of money actually was a weird one, because I'd stolen stuff from the newsagent. And because I just wanted it.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum making me return it and shamefully standing in front of the lady giving it back. And when I gave it back to her, she told me that everything costs money. And I remember that being a very vivid memory. Like, you can't just take what you want.
Wow. That's a good lesson, that.
It was.
And in your household, what was money like for you growing up?
It was really tight. My parents did not have a lot of money, and I was born and kind of came of age in the recession, like the late 80s, early 90s recession.
Because how old are you now?
I'm 41.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my parents had gotten into a really bad situation financially with their mortgage. And I think the interest rates were up around 17%.
Yeah.
And so, every cent that we had was going to pay that mortgage, and there was nothing left, and everything was awful. Like, I remember being in the sixth grade and being told I needed these like certain colored tights for the school musical and being too afraid to tell my parents, because I knew that they would try to buy them, but that it would throw our whole budget into a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were probably $12 tights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, with those lessons of growing up, your memory, growing up in a family that, you know, you weren't trust fund millionaires on the lower north shore of Sydney, what do you think now is your best or worst habit with money?
I would say I'm really nervous about spending money,
right,
still, even though my financial situation is different than what I grew up in. I really get scared to spend money. There's times, like, especially if it's over a certain dollar amount, that I will actually feel lightheaded.
What amount's that?
I would say probably anything more than $200 or $300.
Wow.
I get really scared.
What's the most luxurious item that you've ever purchased for yourself?
Oh, actually, a leather couch.
Really?
Yeah.
How much was that?
I just bought it recently and it was $3,400.
And how did that make you feel?
I actually had to bring friends with me.
Really?
Because I couldn't do it by myself.
Wow.
Yeah, I was that scared.
Wow.
Even though the money was in my bank account,
yeah,
I was too afraid to pull the trigger unless I had my two friends there that were saying, this is okay. Really smart.
Yeah.
It's a good investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So Mel is actually an Aussie who's lived in the United States for the last 16 years. You and your husband Simon came up here for a job opportunity. Now, in terms of money, how do you think the USA is different in terms of money? Because for me, it's very interesting coming up here because the housing prices are so much cheaper. Like you guys, I think you got up to 3 investment properties and the house here. What do you think that you can notice is the main difference in terms of the money culture and mindset with the United States and Australia? And while you're thinking, given that, you know, Australian culture and pop culture is heavily influenced by the United States because all the crap we watch on TV is the US, all the music we listen to is the US. So, but it is different on the ground here.
It really is. Because I feel like in Australia, it's a very speculative market. Like you can make a lot of money pretty quickly in Australia if you're smart. Over here, it's different, especially where I live in the Midwest. And in America, there's different regional personalities. And I live in the Midwest of Ohio. So most people are pretty conservative with their money. They're very sensible with their money. And that, coupled with the fact that a lot of them have gotten massive debt because they went to college and they maybe borrowed $100,000, $150,000 is not abnormal for someone that's 30 years old to have. And it's unsecured debt. It's secured to themselves. But that means they can't then go and buy a house or do kind of what they want to do because they're slaving away. They really are. They're slaving away with this massive debt. And they were sold a lie. And so there's a lot of most millennials in America are really angry because they were told that that college debt is good debt. They were told that.
Wow.
It's good debt. You're investing in yourself and you're going to make it back.
But the problem is those people that have $150,000 of debt on their college are graduating with $40,000 and $50,000 degree incomes.
That's right. And no one kind of sat down and explained that to them. It was a blanket statement. Of course you go to college. Of course you spend all this money. And then there's this romanticism around the college experience. And everyone feels like they need to have this 4-year college experience where you pay to live on campus in a crappy dorm. And
so with the college, like if someone's got $150,000 of college debt, it could be that $110,000 is the actual education and $40,000 is just what they've lived off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It costs around... The cheapest that I've found, because I'm looking for my son right now, it's $12,000 a year room and board, room and board. So if you go for 4 years, that's $50,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Just to live in a crappy, stinky place and eat cafeteria food.
So I guess you guys coming up here, seeing the opportunity with property and looking for your future and looking to set up your financial future well without having that whopping amount of debt, you can walk in and go, investment property, investment property, investment property, and have 3 investment properties in your main house.
Yeah. We sold our house in Australia and we made, I think, $140,000 profit. When we brought it over the exchange rate, it turned into $95,000. And we used that $95,000 to buy 4 homes. Our home we live in and then 3 others because they were, they were great deposits. And because the homes were all under $150,000 each, we were able to buy 4 homes.
So... Question, your current investment property.
Yeah.
How much is that worth?
The one I'm selling right now?
Yeah.
It is worth $200,000.
And what's the monthly rent?
$1,500.
I'm just going to do a calculation. And sorry, you said $200,000?
$200,000, yeah. And $1,500 a month rent.
Yeah. So I've just crunched some numbers. $1,500 a month rent, $200,000 capital price, that's a 9% yield. So in terms of like in Australia, you might only get 4% rental yield. But the difference, I guess, in Australia is you're really banking on that capital gain more so than the yield.
Yeah. Because I guess let's go there. I'm in the process of selling my rentals right now, and I'm only making from what I – the purchase price that I bought 15 years ago to now, they've only jumped up in value. Two of them was $60,000 and the other one was $55,000.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So it's a yield play.
It's a, yes. So it's in the every month you're making more money.
Yeah. So I guess buying the investment property in the States, yes, they might only cost $100,000 for a good property that's yielding well, pay that off, and then you've just got an income stream.
That's right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Along the way here, you've had a little side hustle, and if you can hear in the background, you might hear some paws walking around down the stairs. Tell us about your little side hustle that you started. And you fell into it, did you?
We did. We fell into it through some friends who are breeders, and they breed dogs, and they were wanting to expand their business, but they wanted to create they didn't want to have a puppy mill type of vibe, so they wanted to sell their dogs at a premium price and say that they'd been raised in a loving home and a loving family. And so what happened was we ended up falling into this. So we got two mummy dogs that are girls, and off they go and they meet their little boyfriend and then they get pregnant. And 9 weeks later, after the deed is done, you know, normally 7 or 8 little puppies pop out, and we keep them for 8 weeks, and we play with them, love them, care for them, carry them around, enjoy them.
And I've been here in puppy time before, and it's just been a ball of fun.
It's organized chaos, but there's nothing that makes you happier than a little fluffy puppy that just wants to snuggle you. And so then what happens is we don't do any of the selling or the advertising. We give those beautiful puppies back to the breeder at 8 weeks old, and then we get $500 a puppy for taking care of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun for the kids.
Yes.
And also a bit of side cash for you.
Well, it's great. We average $3,500 or $4,000 a litter, and I always use that as our vacation money.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Very nice. So, okay, so we've just set the scene, I guess, coming till today. So last year, November, you're out to lunch with friends one Sunday and you got a call, and it was a weird random number, okay? What was this call and how did it change your life?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you hear on the movies that one call will change your life, but that literally happened to me. My husband was on a bicycle adventure through Spain, and he had a heart attack and died. And I was called by the US consulate in Spain, informing me of my husband's death at 45. That was awful.
Yeah. And he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
On the side of the road, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is just like one call changed everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, what I don't even know how someone can go through that.
Yeah.
But it's weird. We all will at some point.
Yeah, I'm learning that none of us get off this planet alive, and you just like to pretend that that isn't a reality. But it is. You know, I thought that I would have at least 30 more years with him. I really did. I thought that's, 75 sounds like a lovely age to die.
Yeah.
45 doesn't. But that's my story. Mm. And that's what happened in my life. Mm.
So it's basically almost been a year since Simon died. And I mean, any death is traumatic when it's unexpected. Someone's in a different country. That's crazy. What was your instant thought?
I remember instantly thinking nothing is ever going to be the same again.
Yeah.
And then my immediate thought was, now I'm responsible for everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on me.
Yeah.
I've got three kids that are in school, and my family's on the other side of the world, back in Australia. This is all on me.
Mm.
The house, our career, which we did together, suddenly on me. Mm. All of my children and the responsibilities, the bills, everything landed on my shoulders.
Wow. Now, and it's funny because I've been you know, great family friends with you guys for many, many years. I know Simon was a spender by nature.
He was.
And he did it well.
He was probably the best spender out there. He sucked the marrow out of the marrow of life. If marrow had marrow, he would find it and suck on it.
And so, spend it.
And spend it. He would spend all the marrow. Yes.
Yeah. So you've lived your married life with a spender.
Mm-hmm.
You've grown up knowing that you have to pay things. You have to pay for things. Things cost money. It's scarce. And by nature, you're a saver.
Yes.
So I guess the first thing that people would think, like, what the hell am I going to do financially?
Yes. Yes. And I did think that.
I mean, like, so in that phone call, like, was the first thing like, oh, crap. Second thing, how am I going to tell the kids? At what point do you think, what the hell? How am I going to pay for things? We've just got down to one income instantly.
Because I was the person that ran the money in the house, I thought of that within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I was at a restaurant, which was just so terrible, just a really terrible situation with two of my children. And so luckily I had family friends with me. And so the guy drove me home in his car and I'm in total shock. But it was before I landed in my driveway, I thought, money, what the heck? And needless to say, I'll throw this in, his identity was stolen in Spain at the morgue.
Really?
So when I went online the next day to check, you know, our finances, we were wiped clean.
Really? I didn't know that.
That happened too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So luckily we got all that back after a couple of weeks, but it was a disaster. So on top of finding out my husband's dead, I go on to our bank accounts and everything's gone.
Wow.
Yeah. So, because, you know, his body was at the side of the road.
Yeah.
They grabbed his stuff.
Wow.
Someone went and had
shopping.
A party. Yeah,
wow.
They went shopping.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's a... So, you've just landed home. You're thinking, what the heck? Now, thankfully, Simon did have life insurance.
He did.
And, like, with that stuff, like, was it something that you strategically thought, oh, we need this just in case, you know, because it was never happening to you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. It was amazing. Like for being the spender that he was and he decided that he wanted life insurance probably 8 years ago. And it actually came, you know, quite by accident. And we were talking about with someone else who had life insurance and Simon said, we need to get that. We need that. And I was the one that was like, but it's expensive and I don't know. And so I wanted like a cheapo one. And when we sat down with the guy, Simon was like, no, I want to get a good one. And I want it. So basically the way he worked it out in his mind was I want to be able to pay off the four mortgages. Because we had four mortgages, he's like, I just want enough that I can pay off those. And they weren't big. Like one mortgage was $80,000, but he wanted enough to pay them off so that if anything happened to him, I would be okay.
Mm.
Yeah. And I did the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had the same life insurance.
And I guess it's funny because me being, you know, a financial advisor and I've done numerous claims for people who have passed away prematurely, cancer, haven't been able to work because they've, you know, broken their leg or something like that. I've seen life happen and lives not be financially devastated. So I've seen the value. So I'm really trying to have this message out there that we need to insure us and our families just because people will buy a car and get car insurance as a default.
Yes.
I need to change the culture in Australia that we go straight to protecting ourselves and our loved ones.
That's right. And you know what? I agree because they talk about the different levels of trauma that you can go through and losing your husband and for the sake of my children, like for them losing their dad. I mean, that's so, that's life altering in a way that, cause it's connected to their identity that in a way that it wasn't connected to me. I'm 41. I know who I am, but they're little kids and you need your dad to tell you who you are. It's a really important role. And so if we hadn't had life insurance, we would have had to sell our home, our family home, and we maybe even probably couldn't have bought another home. We would have had to move into a little apartment, which means my kids might have had to move out of their school district, because in the United States of America, you can't just choose where you go. You have to live within a certain area. So for it to be affordable for us, we probably would have had to move into an apartment not in our suburb, which means my kids would have not only lost their childhood home, they would have lost their friend group from their schools.
Could imagine all the levels of trauma psychologically.
Down and down and down all the way to the worst case scenario, which would have been I would have had to move back to Australia. Not that that's bad. But that my kids didn't grow up in Australia.
No.
And so to throw them in an Australian school and they're American, to be living with my parents, you know, and moving in. And I went through all of those terrible scenarios and that could have happened.
See, I guess the life insurance, it just takes any type of financial pressure away so that you can be with your kids and grieve without any type of anxiety.
Yes.
Because grief, it's its own beast, isn't it?
It is. And I, what my heart breaks for people that are grieving and having to change absolutely everything in their life at the same time, because I don't know if I could have done it. I mean, okay, you do what you do when you're in that situation. And so, yes, maybe I could have done it, but it would have taken so much out of me.
Mm.
And it would have been something where, I knew very quickly when we pulled the life insurance policy out, we looked through it and you were there and you looked through it and you're like, everything is in order. We double checked that the automatic payment had been coming out every month. We did all of those things. And once we realized, yes, we've been paying it every month and here it is, the peace that descended on me in that moment was massive because honestly, I didn't even think about it again. And I completely was able to refocus on my kids and on making other decisions, like what am I going to do about my future? What is my life going to look like now as a single mum versus a married woman?
Mm.
Yeah. So it gave me the mental real estate, if you will, to be able to make other decisions in my life without the fear of money.
Or the urgency.
Yes.
That we have to do this and we have to make a big decision in grief, because I always tell people, and we had this discussion yesterday, you've got this money, it still might be a year before you actually do anything major with it.
Exactly.
And people might be thinking Simon was a cyclist riding fit. I mean, he was doing a ride through the Spanish Alps.
Yes. And he was 165 pounds.
Right.
He was fit and young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just out of the blue, heart attack.
Yeah.
And you had a friend who was a cardiologist in town here have a look at the autopsy, was that correct?
Yeah, he's the head of the emergency services for Central Ohio. So he basically handles any type of ambulance that comes out, fire. He is the chief over all of that.
Yeah. And he had a look and he said, look, this could have happened walking down the street.
He said it was inevitable.
Yeah.
He said that he had about 6 weeks where it would have happened, whether he was exerting himself. He said it just happened 6 weeks before because he was exerting himself.
Wow.
But he said it was going to happen in the next 6 weeks because that blood clot was so big and it was in the widowmaker artery. Which means, it was an inevitable.
Wow.
That it would have come loose within a certain amount of time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did you, did he have travel insurance?
He did.
And did that help with the funeral costs or the getting him back to the
States?
It was
the transportation costs because, these are the funny things. Like you never really, you have your, in theory, this is the way our life is going to look like. And we'd even talked about, things like burial versus cremation, you have those conversations. And he was always like, cremate me.
Yeah.
So when he passed away in Spain, I thought, well, he wants to be cremated. But I spoke to my counselor before I left and he said, absolutely not. If you have the money to bring him home, you need to bring him home in full body because your children need to see him.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, they're never going to have that connection between that really is my dad, there is his body, he really died. He goes, they'll think that their dad abandoned them.
Yeah.
And so he's like, if you have the insurance that will enable you to bring home his body intact, do it. Because that will actually help with their grieving as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go, kids, get travel insurance.
Amazing. And they did everything. They handled it all.
So I guess, you know, what did you do with the money immediately?
Pay off debt.
Yeah, sweet. So then it was like kind of this, the first stage was let's get the money. Second stage, let's get rid of the debt.
Yes.
And then realistically, because we discussed this at the time, if you didn't do anything for a year, it wouldn't have mattered because nothing actually matters anymore because you've got no financial pressure, you're debt free. Let's just get on with loving each other and grieving.
Basically, exactly.
And trying to find our new norm.
Yes. And that's exactly what we did. You know, we took a good holiday back to Australia and just rested for 3 weeks, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just, there was a very freeing feeling to realize now that I've paid off all of our debt and I own our home, the income that I receive as I'm a full-time working mum is enough for our family to live well.
Mm. And the thing is, and this is the amazing thing, right? With the life insurance, you know, you've actually got the option to continue to work and engage in society.
Yes.
Or be a full-time mum.
Absolutely.
Or be a part-time mum.
Yes.
Money just gives you options.
It does.
Along the whole way. And so another thing you did as well, the house needed a bit of work.
Yes.
And I think while you were in Australia, you basically almost had it fully renovated, like bathrooms, ensuite. So you actually did make it a bit nicer.
Yeah. We were able to invest money into the home, things that we've wanted to do since we bought it, you know, all these years ago. We did a lot of it ourselves, but major things like adding an ensuite where there wasn't one.
Yeah.
That wasn't like a weekend warrior kind of adventure. Mm. We needed a professional. And so, yeah, so we were able to go away and the professionals came in and basically tore the top part of my house off. And when I came home to two brand new bathrooms, which was wonderful.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So if we fast forward right now, almost been a year, you've come a long way in your grief. And, you know, I think you said to me once that, you know, it's almost like the scar's still there, but there's just every day there's a small stitch or whatever. Like,
yeah. I said, you know, that wound, it's a gaping wound. Grief is a gaping wound. Mm. But yeah, every time you progress through a milestone and you don't numb yourself, now that's the point. You don't, if you numb yourself and hide away, or, you know, you indulge in substances or go on big shopping sprees or do something really stupid, nothing happens. You just numb yourself from the wound.
Mm.
My whole thing with this grief process has been I want to feel everything.
Yeah.
And for me to feel everything, I have to be present for it.
Yeah.
Body, soul, spirit. But every time I'm able to do that, it's like a stitch in the wound, and it's slowly but surely the wound is starting to close. Yeah, the scar will always be there.
The scar will always be there, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you're now, every single day since that phone call, you're more lucid, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
So in your current state, because you had people, and this is the funny thing, people always tell you what you should do. Now, and the good thing about having that life insurance money, you can actually go, hey, everyone, get stuffed. Don't actually care about stuff at the moment. I care about my freaking kids.
That's right.
And through this last 12 month journey, there's been, do I sell the investment property? Like, what do I do? It's not that bad. And so what did you decide to do? You've paid off all the debt. What did you decide to do with the properties and with the capital that's left over? And I'll just say for those at home, when it wasn't a $300,000 life insurance policy. Like, it was real money, and Simon really did make sure his family were looked after.
Yes.
I mean, they're not on private jets now, and, you know, it's not.
Yeah, I still don't have enough money for a NetJet subscription.
Yeah, that's
right. Been lovely, and they're right across the road from me.
Yeah.
So that would have been great at the airport, but no, definitely not.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were able to sit down and really the decision that I made a decision to sell our rentals, our three other rentals. And we had always kept them there for retirement. That's, you know, and so our attitude was we will go through all of the minutiae of ridiculousness with rentals. Right now, I was the rental manager and responsible for re-renting, doing all of stuff. And my husband did all of the maintenance, unless it was something too big. And so we handled it really well because it was the two of us and it was a shared responsibility. When it all fell on my shoulders, I realized for me to carry all of that responsibility, it's going to take me away from the things that I actually love to do. And I have a career that I love and I really wanted to, you know, put extra thought and momentum in that. And then I have children that I adore and a home that I need to run. So really between those two things, my entire pie is taken up from that. And so I thought the rentals need to go. I didn't, and you know, by pie, I mean like the mental pie map of my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I realized the rentals are probably taking 30% of my focus and I don't want to do that. So we sold them.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. And so you put some money away for the kids' education.
Yeah. I really wanted the profits from the rentals between what we owed and what we made to be a gift for my kids because we had three rentals, three kids. That makes sense. So the way we did it was so $50,000 from each sale has gone into their college fund. And my attitude was like losing your father is hard enough. Having to then go to college and get into debt yourself at 18 years old is even harder and more traumatic. So how about this can be their gift from their dad?
Mm.
So that really meant a lot to me to be able to do that for them.
Yeah. And now it's a matter of, and again, as this kind of podcast, we were talking yesterday, like in financial planning, like it's just about we've got to attack goals and in what order. Now, the goal for you at the moment is to get the kids into college.
Yes.
And there might be another 10 years of you being mother hen and really doing all that. So that's got to be the main focus. And then the question is like the leftover quote unquote money, we need to make sure there's always an emergency fund.
That's right.
So for the first time in your life, financially, due to the worst circumstances in the world, you've got no financial stress.
Yeah, it's really weird. Because I even as a child, my parents lived week to week, and I got married very young and married a spender, and so we lived week to week. Even
we got on so well, Simon and
yes, I. Yes, you did. I was so worried when the two of you would go off on your little adventures because you'd come home with new technology. And looking smashing with your new outfits and your new hats and your new whatevers and your new shoes. And I'd be like, oh, mercy, how are we going to do this? And it only worked because I was such a nerdy saver that I could make things work. But we still did live pretty week to week. Mm. And that pressure has always hung over me like a cloud.
Mm.
And so the feeling right now that there's this terrible meme that goes around that says I just want to be rich enough to not have to think if I can afford the extra $2 for guacamole at Chipotle.
Yeah.
That's my real life. Like I always asked that question before, but now I don't.
Mm, but it's weird. The vibe of scarcity could be there forever.
It could.
Because the lounge was a recent purchase.
It was.
And if you drop $3,000 in the street tomorrow, it wouldn't change your life.
No. No. But it's in my mind.
Exactly.
I know the value of money from a scarcity mindset, not a, you know, whatever the opposite abundance of scarcity is. There we go. Abundance.
Yeah.
That word. I don't even know what it is.
The cash cow.
I don't know that. You know, I've never had an emergency fund in my life.
Yeah.
And it's always been through the skin of our teeth, through the juggling of paying bills and, you know, we were never defaulting on anything. We were always really good with our bills and the things we owed, but we always just made it.
And swinging back to what do we do? Like we've got a house that's basically just been renovated, it's repainted, there's a new roof. That was an insurance job when a tree fell on it a couple of years ago. Like you can actually stay here and be quite comfortable now.
Definitely.
For 10 years and, you know, there's a basement area for the kids.
Yeah.
So in financial planning land, we've got money left over. All our goals have been met. Yes. The income comes in. And I asked you yesterday, can you still save money based on your income? And the answer is absolutely yes, you can.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, we've got this lump sum of money. What do we do with it? And this is the dance of, well, we need to make sure future Mel is taken care of, and broadly she is financially. But, and I don't know the American tax system, but if we're sitting in Australia right now, it would be, well, do we allocate maybe a percentage, 25% to superannuation,
yeah,
and lock that away in a tax effective environment for the very long term? And then the balance, do we put that in an equity portfolio in your own name that can just tick along? Because when you're so young, we still have to allow for things that might happen in life. Like, you've got an acre block here or something?
I do. I live, the house that we bought on purpose, we loved another, it's on an acre, but right next door is another acre that is ours as well that we own. And so we always had a dream of building kind of our dream home on that second acre. And it's still there vacant, just, you know, growing my vegetables right now in my little garden. But one day we might do something different with it.
Yeah, that's right. So we need to have that money because we don't need the money in the short term.
No.
Within 5 years, so it needs to go to work. But in 8, 9, 10 years, if you go, well, the kids have moved out, I want a nice little house myself, who knows what your life will look like then.
Yeah.
Money gives you options, but we need to make sure we've got access to that money.
Definitely.
So it's just a really, I've just sat in situations like this and widows have been left with debt and it breaks my heart. And that's why I always harp on, if you're listening to this now and you have a family and you are not insured, and it's not even a sales pitch, like just do it. Like, yeah. I can't sell you insurance, but just let me introduce you to someone who can set it up. Like, I don't care. Just get it sorted and then get on with your life.
It's amazing because, you know, in the grief, explaining this to my children, because my kids, all three of them, were aware that, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we always met their needs and it was lovely and they never had any financial stress. The way I grew up, I had financial stress. My kids didn't, but they knew that every dollar mattered and that it was allocated. And so when we were getting the house fixed up and, you know, redoing the driveway, doing the, all three of them at different times came to me and said, "Mom, can we afford this? I'm worried."
Yeah.
And the amazing thing that I could do was sit down and say, "Actually, your dad always wanted to do this. I'm not making up ideas. He dreamt about renovating the house like this. And because he got life insurance, he's made it possible. This is actually his way of loving us." And this is like a hug. A life insurance
policy is a final love letter.
It is a total final love. And I said, this is like your dad hugging you and saying, "I love you." Mm. And these are all the dreams that I had for our family home and for the way we were going to do it and you going off to college. He wanted all of those things for you. He couldn't provide it. But we had him, and we don't get to choose when we die. So we didn't get to choose his death or the manner of his death. But because he made a decision to get life insurance, that was him saying, "If I'm not here, I can still love you in and be the father that I've always wanted to be and the husband, even in my death, that continues on."
Mm.
And that's a massive gift.
And even the fact when it's snowing next and it's miserable, you can get out of the car. Actually, did you know that you've got to do one more thing and you've got total permission to do this financially? Put an awning out there.
Yes, I mean, have looked at that.
We've just spent $12,000 on a beautiful bloody driveway that we're not, I'm not going to get muddy shoes next time I come here in the winter.
That's all right.
I think we can do the awning out there.
Okay.
So that's my challenge to you because
thank you.
I think you need to just do it.
Yeah.
And
it would be lovely if we could do that. And I could. Now that's it's right. Just one but of those things.
But it's that we've just got to, you know, money's there. It's not run out and spend it all, but let's just be measured and considered. And I think that'd be a good case for that. Just again, just to make your life just that little bit more pleasant.
Yes. I think that sounds great. And again, it's so hard for me because I'm not a spender.
Mm.
That's why I need you around, Glenn. You can help me. I would get really nervous. I'm good at standing running. You are, and I'm not. I'm terrible at it, you know. Like, I haven't changed my mindset yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm learning that I need people that know how to help me to walk me through that and hold my hand and say, you can do this. This is worthwhile.
Yeah. If there's a single mother listening or a single father, be it widow, widower, divorcee, divorce, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing it tough on any front, money, personal, I don't know. Is there anything, because we've got a unique situation here that we're talking to thousands of people right now.
Yeah.
Imagine us in a stadium, like we're having a chat with thousands of people.
That's crazy.
And I always like to do this podcast for the one person who's listening. So you're a single mum, you've put the kids down to bed, you've got that hour of your time.
Yeah.
You're bloody buggered and exhausted. You're talking to Mel and Glenn, and Mel's got something to say to you. What are you saying to her or him?
Yeah. I'm saying that you're really brave and that I'm really proud that you're showing up. The fact that you would be listening to this podcast
to try and get encouraged and learn.
It means that you are not just drowning in your sorrow, and it means that you haven't given up. And I think that the best gift that you can give your children and yourself is to say, my best days are ahead of me, not behind me. And grief has a way of trying to trap you in a narrative that says the best days of your life are behind you with the person that you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with, and now you're not, by sometimes divorce or death or even disability.
Mm.
And I would like to tell you is that as long as you are showing up every single day with an open heart and a decision to say, I am going to make the most of this day, you are going to have a beautiful life, even if it doesn't look the way that you thought it was going to look. A lot of times we have this mindset of my life is going to be a success if it hits all of these markers, and that's not entirely true. Your life can be successful even in the midst of deep grief, sorrow, a swerve that happens. You can still have a beautiful life, and your kids are the people that are watching you make that decision to live and to keep choosing life and to keep choosing to go forward and to keep dreaming. They need to see you.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You keep dreaming. Like I always say, like with money, it's got to be one eye on today, one eye on the future.
That's right. Always. What is right now, you know, and to me, like, you might be the person that, you know, you only ever buy something on sale. And that was the joke of my kids. They used to stop asking me for stuff because I'd hear them say, oh, I want that. And one of my other kids would say, Mum's only going to buy it if it's on sale. And like, that was kind of the way our family was. But, you know, all of those little 50 cents here and a dollar there that you're saving at Coles or wherever you're shopping at, that actually can add up to be something really special. And maybe your goal looks different than anyone else's goal. Maybe your goal is to give your kids a great holiday every other year. And you're putting that extra $75 that you're saving from your pay packet because you're shopping the sales away and you're just squirreling it away. Good on you.
And on that as well, got to get rid of toxic noises in your life.
Oh, explain more about that.
Well, like, you know, everyone's got a freaking opinion.
Yeah.
And I always talk to people and they're doing stuff based on someone else's. How can I rephrase it? It's like if you're in that situation and you're doing something just because your parents want you to do it this way because it's best for you because we know, or you've got a friend who's jealous, or I don't know what the situation, but
yeah.
You've just got to remove toxic people out of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am amazed at how many people outsource their joy to other people because they're afraid of their opinions about them.
Absolutely.
You know, like, oh, if I don't go out for drinks on a Friday night, I'm going to get hell from some of my mates, right? But maybe that's $60 that in 3 months' time, I can, you know, I can do something completely different with that money. And suddenly I've got $1,000 that I didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And that's worth more. Maybe that's my emergency fund. And for the first time in my life, I'm not going to be worrying that the hot water heater is going to break down. And I'm not going to know where the money's coming from because I made a decision not to go out for drinks every night for 2 months, every Friday night for 2 months.
Yeah.
So. Like they're those things that really matter. And and really in the end of the day, you get to make a decision and decide what your life looks like for you and what a win is. And only you get to decide what a win is.
Yeah.
You know? So for me now, the win is my children absolutely navigating this really awful season in their life. Like I know that for the rest of their life, they're going to remember and look back on this time as a time of total confusion and grief. I don't want to add financial pressure and stress.
Totally.
And then,
and you've
kind
of, at least one thing, they can go back to their own bedroom.
Yes.
In the grief.
Yes.
It's not a new environment. It's yeah.
Their own house, their own bedroom.
Their own friends.
Their friends at their school, which is so important. All of those, none of that had to change. Even though their dad died, nothing else changed. Mm. And I fought really hard for that. And that was my win.
Mm.
That was my win. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your money story and being brave and looking in from, you know, afar and knowing you. I'm sure each day is a new day and it's its own day and it's a day at a time. And it might be that way for some time. It might, I don't know. It's,
yeah.
You know, you're just doing amazing under these circumstances and I can do anything, you know, my number. Actually, you didn't know my American number the other day.
No, it actually creeped me out. He said, you said something like, are we hanging out tonight? No. And I'm like, holy crap, who is this weirdo?
I was like, yo, what's happening tonight?
That's right. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, and then I'm like, oh, I don't know if I've texted on my American number.
No, I wrote right back and I'm like, who is this?
It's your boy, Vinny.
Oh my gosh, it was ridiculous. Yeah. But that was better. But yeah, thank you. And you know what? We're doing it. And I think that's what family's all about and friends are all about. Mm. We're here in the good and the bad and the ugly. So we're doing it.
All right. Thanks, Mel.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you are after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. But if you do want somebody to talk to, jump onto sortyourmoneyout.com and click on Get Help, and I'll be able to put you in touch with an advisor or a mortgage broker who can actually sit down with you or have a Skype or a Zoom meeting and really work out what you need based on your own personal circumstances.
My Millennial Money supports A21. A21 is a non-profit organization that exists to abolish slavery everywhere. These guys rescue real people from human trafficking across the world. If you want to learn more about how you can contribute to the fight against human trafficking, check out a21.org/AU.
Remember, we hang out on Insta at My Millennial Money. If you're a regular listener, you're welcome to join our Facebook group. If you want more money hacks, be sure to subscribe to My Millennial Money Express. It's short money hacks, anywhere, anytime, right into your ears.